From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the Bible tells us there is nothing new under the sun. So often what passes for news is really nothing more than a refresher. Case in point is a new study out of Harvard University on the link between religious upbringing and subsequent health and well-being. We'll talk about it with noted family and marriage researcher and scholar Dr. Brad Wilcox. And speaking of faith and family, this weekend is the Values Voter Summit. And one of our keynote speakers is Vice President Mike Pence. And he joins us a little later here on Washington Watch. Later in the program, we'll check in with North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, who was with President Trump today as he checked on the relief efforts that are underway in the wake of Hurricane Florence. And I plan on taking your phone calls. The website, tperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at tperkins. There's still room for you to come to the Values Voter Summit to find out how you can be a part of it. Go to tonyperkins.com, follow the links over. All right, the big question today is, will she or won't she? Will Dr. Christine Ford testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee about her allegation that she was harassed or assaulted 36 years ago by Judge Brett Kavanaugh? Here is Chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Charles Grassley, discussing this matter earlier today.
Well, where I'm focused right now is doing everything that we can to make Dr. Ford comfortable with coming before our committee, either in an open session or a closed session or a public or a private interviews. That's four different ways she can choose to come. And so I'm not worried about anything other than just focusing for the next few days on encouraging her to come.
Now, we will obviously be watching this very, very closely. This, again, I mean, so many aspects of this makes it suspect, but it underscores what's at stake here in the control of the United States Supreme Court. Will there be justices that, as we've seen in Gorsuch, in which we have heard that Brett Kavanaugh speak to the fact that he is an originalist, he looks at the text of the Constitution, versus the activist judges who use the bench to craft policy, which is not the role of the courts. Anyway, I'm just telling you, folks, this underscores what's at stake here. And not making any definitive claims here, but I'm just saying the whole process makes it look suspect. All right, now for news that really shouldn't be news. A report out of Harvard University says that participating in spiritual practices during childhood and adolescence may be a protective factor for a range of health and well-being outcomes in early adulthood. I mean, most people used to know that to be the case, but now it's news. It's encouraging news, and it's good that it's being talked about, especially at Harvard University. With us now is Dr. Brad Wilcox. He's Senior Fellow, Institute for Family Studies, Visiting Scholar, American Enterprise Institute. Brad, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's good to be here, Tony.
This is, you know, for some, this is a no-brainer. I mean, this is the kind of stuff we've seen. But the fact scholars are paying attention to this connection and it's being validated through the social sciences is, in fact, an encouraging message.
Yeah, well, I think we've all seen in the last few weeks some pretty negative items regarding religion and kids. And we have to sort of bear in mind that, you know, on average, it looks like childhood religiosity or kids' exposure to religion is linked to some good outcomes. And this new research from Tyler Vanderbilt, Harvard, shows that, you know, both attending church and praying are linked to things like greater happiness, less drug use, and less depression.
I mean, it says, according to the report, 18% are more likely to report being happier. We're seeing that they're less likely to have sex in an earlier age and to have a sexually transmitted infection. So when we look at the connection here of this exposure, this weekly periodic exposure to religious activities, it leads to positive outcomes for society as a whole, not to mention the individuals involved.
Yeah, that's right. I think what's happening here in this particular space, we're seeing basically how for kids, religion imparts a sense of meaning and purpose and identity that are constructive. You know, in a world where they're often forces in the, you know, in the pop culture and in their peer group that can erode their sense of their self and can make them more vulnerable to any number of psychological maladies. So we see, for instance, a big increase in teenage suicide since 2008, really. And, you know, as we see this sort of increase in suicide, it's nice to know that there are some things here that are associated with kind of protecting our teens from, you know, falling prey in this case to taking their own lives.
Yeah, and this is a fairly significant sample size. I mean, there's 5,000 youth who were followed for a time between the ages of 8 and 14. So this is a pretty significant study to be that large. So, I mean, it's I would say that, and you being a researcher, that this is a pretty reliable study.
Right. I think one, you know, obvious criticism that's been raised in the study is that you can't randomly assign kids to religious homes and secular homes. You know, so we have to be careful here about kind of our causal claim. On the other hand, what the researchers are doing is they're looking at kids at one point in their lives and then following them, you know, 8, 9, 10, up to 14 years later, and seeing how being religious at time one is linked to being better off psychologically at time two. And so that's a more compelling research design, just sort of showing that this religiosity is associated later in life with better outcomes for young adults.
And we've, Brad, have we seen this in other studies that validate these same type of findings of the connection, the positive connection between the exposure to religious practice, prayer, meditation, and these positive social outcomes?
Certainly my work indicates that particularly joint attendance at church is linked to happier and more stable marriages. There was this sort of meme out there, you know, a number of years ago that suggested that Christians were just as likely to get divorced as other Americans. And if you're looking at just kind of, you know, reports of a born-again experience or reports of being affiliated, that's true. When you switch attention to church going, you find that church goers are markedly less likely to get divorced, about 35% less likely to get divorced. And that's especially true for couples who attend church together. And then we find, too, that praying together outside of just grace at meals is a very powerful predictor of marital happiness and intimacy for a couple.
Wow, that's pretty significant. I mean, those are not deep religious activities. I mean, just praying grace at meals, and maybe it's reflective of a deeper faith that takes place in the home. And I know that in your work, I've followed your work, used your work for years, even back when I was in office as I worked on family policy. But it's studies like this, Brad, that shows me that government, you know, shouldn't be, obviously government can't promote religion in terms of telling people you should do this, but they shouldn't adopt policies that discourage religious participation, nor marginalizes it, as we see often in school settings, you know, really where kids get a message that religion is bad, when in fact what we see is the evidence suggests that it's good for them.
So, I mean, it does suggest that having, you know, high regard for the First Amendment and for freedom of association, freedom of religion, you know, are obviously integral constitutional values and ones that should be respected for both sort of philosophical reasons, but here also for kind of social and psychological reasons as well.
Well, Brad, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us. And again, to me, a fascinating study, especially the fact that it's coming out of Harvard University. So appreciate all the work you do, Brad.
Thanks, Tony, for having me on.
All right, Brad Wilcox, noted researcher and scholar when it comes to family and faith, senior fellow at the Institute for Family Studies, and a visiting scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Here's what, as I see this, and we have seen the same results at FRC in our research. We used to have the Institute for Marriage and Religion that we launched out, and it's Dr. Pat Fagan. You've heard him on the program many times. But he looked at all of the connection points between faith, family structure, and social outcomes. This is not new. What is new is that, you know, you're seeing this coming out of Harvard. And the point I was making there with Dr. Wilcox is that, you know, I understand there's a government cannot embrace, promote religion, according to the First Amendment, establishment of religion. That's been turned on its head to where we are discouraging religious participation by, you know, things we talk about here quite often, where kids are, you know, told they can't pray in school, they can't read the Bible. They, you know, this crazy stuff which sends a message that religion is bad. But what we are seeing in the outcomes is that religion, participating in that, is, it has positive outcomes. In fact, it addresses all of the issues that people are running around trying to find solutions to. Teen suicide, teen sex activity, sexually transmitted diseases, which are near pandemic. And the answer is right before us. I mean, the wise will be made stupid. I think I've read that somewhere before, not quite sure where. This is why, folks, we have to advocate for our freedom of religion and fight for our children, that the left will not succeed in purging religion from our public discourse, that the public square will not somehow, you know, if they had their way, they would come and every public building in Washington, D.C. that has God on it and God We Trust or Moses or any other reference from the Bible or biblical times would be chiseled off. We have to defend this faith and the right to participate in it. Because we see right here in studies like this that the outcomes are positive, not only for the individuals, the children involved, but for society as a whole. It just sometimes baffles me when you see this in black and white. Policymakers see it, but yet they run from the solution. So anyway, check this out. It's pretty fascinating. I wrote about it yesterday in my update because I think this is it validates what you stand for, what I stand for, what we advocate for each and every day here at the Family Research Council. Okay, don't go away. Still to come. We're going to be joined here in just a little bit by the Vice President. Mike Pence is going to be joining us. He's going to be at the Values Voter Summit this weekend. We're going to check in with Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, who was with President Trump today as he was touring the Carolinas in the wake of Florence. So, and I hope to be able to get to your phone calls as well. So, a lot going on. If you can make your way to the Values Voter Summit, do so. It's going to be a great weekend. If not, here's what you need to do. Go ahead and download the Stand Firm app. Get it on your smartphone. Go to the App Store, Stand Firm app, or go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. Okay, stay right there because coming up next after the break, the Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence, joins us right here on Washington Watch. That's to come next. Don't go away.
Are we moving in the right direction? If you're like me, you care a lot about where our country is headed. With so much at stake in America, do our leaders have a way forward? To find out, mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans that want to preserve and protect religious freedom, family values, and the sanctity of human life. Invited and confirmed speakers include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Sam Brownback, Ben Carson, Kellyanne Conway, Mike Pompeo, Laura Ingraham, Oliver North, Dana Lash, Sean Hannity, Joel Rosenberg, Todd Starnes, and Mark Levin. Meet values voters like yourself that share a Christian worldview on issues. Through the main events, networking in the exhibit hall, breakouts, movie premieres, and meet and greets with our speakers. On September 21st to 23rd, be a part of the movement to pray, vote, and stand for the sake of America. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Glad to have you along. A lot going on this week. Of course, there's always a lot going on in Washington, but across the nation, massive flooding continues in the Carolinas from Hurricane Florence, the relief effort well underway. Democrats here in the city doing everything they can to delay a vote on Judge Brett Kavanaugh for the Supreme Court. And just around the corner, the annual Values Voters Summit. Major topics this year at the gathering of social conservatives from across the country. Obviously, the elections this fall, very, very important. But also religious liberty. It's taken a unique focus from this administration, both here and abroad. And a lot of things happening on that front, which should be encouraging to Christians all across this nation and literally around the world. Well, speaking of the Values Voters Summit, one of our keynote speakers, probably the keynote speaker this year, joins us now, the Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence. Vice President, Mr. Vice President, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, great to be with you on Washington Watch, and really looking forward to the Values Voters Summit this coming weekend. But as you mentioned, our hearts are all with the people in North Carolina and South Carolina. The president was wheels up this morning. He's touring the area. We couldn't be more proud of the way first responders in North Carolina and South Carolina have responded to Hurricane Florence. Our FEMA team, our Coast Guard, literally making hundreds of rescues. But we know it's a long way back, and you personally, Tony, no, it's a long way back after a hurricane, and I'll never forget the time the president and I visited your church. We saw the way you came alongside families, even while your own family was growing through great distress. So I certainly encourage all your listeners to support organizations like Samaritan's Purse and Red Cross that are going to be there for the long haul, will be there till these communities recover and rebuild, but people should also keep people of the Carolinas in their prayers.
Without question. And speaking of that, that was in August of 2016, yourself.
I remember it well.
You came down, and actually, the New York Times talked about that as a turning point in the campaign, because I saw as you and the president and Franklin Graham and I were in a suburban going around looking at some of the areas. Every place was devastated, and the president wanted to stop and talk to some of the families that were pulling their belongings out of their homes. I saw the side of the president that most people don't get a chance to see, the compassionate, empathetic side of the president. You know, and I have found that What I think makes this president successful, and of course you have a much closer view of it, but in the interaction I've had with him over the last few years, is that he has a unique ability to empathize with people that, you know, just allows him to connect in ways I've not seen others do.
Well, you saw that. I'll never forget the day that we got out of the vehicles and we walked over to the home of that man who's literally a home built on the grounds where he had been born. Mm-hmm. Was flooded all the way up to the top of the living room, and this elderly gentleman and his wife, then the candidate, Donald Trump, looked them in the eye and said, "Are you going to rebuild?" And he shook his head and said, "Well, we don't know." You know, he said, we're getting on in years, and, you know, we just don't know if we can do it. And the president reached over, and you were standing right there. The president reached over, grabbed him by the shoulder, and looked him in the eye, and he said, "I know people. You're going to rebuild." And you know what? It gives me chills to think a year later we went back, and that man rebuilt. But the look on his face and the president expressing confidence to him. I know. As the president tours today, he's going to be encouraging our first responders, thanking them for working 24/7, saving lives, pulling people out of harm's way. But I know he's also going to be projecting that strength and that compassion for families that have endured loss. And it is I like to say he's got broad shoulders. And people around the country and around the world know that, but President Donald Trump's got a big heart, and that's what takes him down to the Carolinas today, too.
And by the way, just a side note there, that house was rebuilt because of Samaritan's Purse that came in and rebuilt that house.
That's right.
And this is one of the areas, Mr. Vice President, that I have seen now that I've been through, I don't know, 5-6 natural disasters in the relief effort. This administration has opened the door to partner with the nonprofits and the religious organizations in ways that previous administrations never have done. And I think it makes us a stronger nation when we roll up our sleeves, regardless of who is on the payroll, who's a volunteer, what your faith background is, and simply work together.
Well, it's so right. On a broad range of issues, not only making sure that policies respect religious liberty of people, but in hardship. I'll never forget the time Karen and I went down to a small town in Texas last year that had been devastated by a hurricane, and to literally see hundreds and hundreds of volunteers who had trucked in from the Midwest and brought food and supplies and love and support. Look, you've been through it. You know, your own family. I know your family was out of your home for many months, even while you were leading your church and leading recovery efforts in your community, Tony. But it's a long way back. We'll make sure the federal resources are there. You know, we have FEMA team on the ground right now doing the assessments to make sure that individual support is there for communities and businesses to recover. But you know, as well as I do, people who are willing to go out and be the hands and feet of their faith and make that real, to come alongside families, literally house by house, make a difference. And they have a witness for their faith that is powerful and meaningful as well.
Well, Mr. Vice President, we're almost up against a break, and two other topics I want to cover before we lose you here, and you got to move on. I know the Values Voter Summit's coming up, but one of the issues that you just touched on that this administration has been focused on like a laser is the issue of religious liberty, and this is an important issue for you and for the president.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's simply no question, and you've seen from early in this administration, President Trump is taken decisive action to ensure the religious liberty of Americans is respected. But we're also very proud of what we've been able to do to support persecuted religious minorities around the world. Over $100 million to help rebuild communities, Christian and religious minority communities around the world. Every American can be confident. This is an administration deeply committed to religious freedom at home and around the world.
All right, Mr. Vice President, not many people probably say this, but I need you to hold on. All right? Hold for me just a moment, if you will. We're going to come back from the break. I want to talk about Judge Brett Kavanaugh when we return. Folks, don't go away. We have the Vice President, Mr. Mike Pence, on the line. Don't go away. We're back after this.
feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us. The Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence, my guest. Mr. Vice President, this is actually not the first time you've been on Washington Watch. First time as Vice President,
right.
But actually you once hosted Washington Watch when you were in Congress.
I did. Never as good as you. You know, and as your listeners may not know, you know, I made a living. I made a living in talk radio back in the 1990s, and you were a guest on my show.
That's the first time we met. You were a radio talk show host in Indianapolis, and I was in office. So we've kind of reversed roles here. I think you got the better gig. I mean, you even got an airplane to get around on.
I don't know. We appreciate your leadership, and I know millions of people across the country appreciate your voice and Washington Watch on the airwaves, Tony.
Well, thank you, Mr. Vice President. Let me ask you this: a lot in the news, Brett Kavanaugh, and this I've said this before, so this is I'm not saying this just because you're on the air. I have given this administration extremely high marks when it comes to judicial selection. From the district courts to the appellate courts to the Supreme Court, Justice Gorsuch, and now Brett Kavanaugh. Are you concerned by the delays that we're seeing in the allegations made? Is this going to derail this nomination?
Well, first, let me say thank you for the kind words about the men and women that President Trump has nominated, and this Republican majority in the Congress, of the Senate rather, has confirmed to our federal courts at every level. Last year, we literally set a record of more men and women confirmed to our courts of appeals in a single year than any administration in American history. And they were all principled conservatives, men and women with a record and a commitment of interpreting the Constitution as written, and I couldn't be more proud from Justice mm-hmm. Neil Gorsuch all the way down, and it was a Republican majority in the United States Senate that made that possible, and now that same Republican majority is going through the process of advise and consent of the president's nominee to the Supreme Court, Judge Brett Kavanaugh. And let me just say to begin with, I had the opportunity to meet Judge Kavanaugh before the president made a decision to review his record. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is a man of integrity, deeply committed to his family, with a lifetime of service to this country in a variety of roles. And on the District of Columbia Court of Appeals, more than 300 opinions that reflect a strong and principled judicial philosophy that, again, interprets statutes as written, will interpret the Constitution as written, will not legislate from the bench. And we believe that he will make an outstanding justice to the Supreme Court of the United States. Now that being said, as President Trump has said over the last several days, with the allegations that have emerged, it's important that we give it time, that we hear from both sides, and we have every confidence that Senator Grassley and the Republicans in the Senate will handle these allegations properly. I know Senator Grassley has laid forward a range of options from an open session hearing to a closed session to private staff interviews, and the staff in the Judiciary Committee has already begun following up on leads following Dr. Ford's allegations, and that's all very important. And again, we're confident the Senate will handle it. But that being said, that what Senator Dianne Feinstein has done here, what Democrats in the Senate have done here, is very unfair to Judge Brett Kavanaugh, and it is a great disservice to the process. I mean, the fact that Senator Feinstein apparently had this letter more than 6 weeks ago, never raised the issue in her interview with Judge Brett Kavanaugh, never brought the issue to the attention of other members of the Judiciary Committee, is just a great disservice to the process and to the American people, and of course to Judge Brett Kavanaugh and his family. And frankly, it follows on conduct by many Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee who I think virtually embarrassed themselves during the public hearings that were on display just a short days ago. So that being said, I will just say the president and I believe that Judge Brett Kavanaugh will make an outstanding addition to the Supreme Court of the United States. We're very confident that the Senate will handle this all in a proper and appropriate way.
Well, I would say at a minimum that the timing of this makes it very suspect, and the way it's been handled by Feinstein and the Democrats makes it suspect, regardless of what the hearings may produce. Mr. Vice President, almost out of time. Very quickly, what might we anticipate to hear from you this weekend at the Values Voter Summit?
Well, we're going to hear about an incredible record of success. We're rebuilding our military, more than 4 million new jobs created, tax cuts, regulations rolled back. We've taken a strong stand for the right to life, the strong stand for America's leadership in the world. And I'm just looking forward to reminding people at the Values Voter Summit and supporters all across this country how important it is that we reelect Republican majorities in the House and Senate in November of 2018.
Mr. Vice President, look forward to seeing you this weekend at the Values Voter Summit. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. Great to be on Washington Watch.
All right, folks, don't go away. We're back right after this with more.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
Are we moving in the right direction? If you're like me, you care a lot about where our country is headed. With so much at stake in America, do our leaders have a way forward? To find out, mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans that want to preserve and protect religious freedom, family values, and the sanctity of human life. Invited and confirmed speakers include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Sam Brownback, Ben Carson, Kellyanne Conway, Mike Pompeo, Laura Ingraham, Oliver North, Dana Lash, Sean Hannity, Joel Rosenberg, Todd Starnes, and Mark Levin. Meet Values voters like yourself that share a Christian worldview on issues. Through the main events, networking in the exhibit hall, breakouts, movie premieres, and meet and greets with our speakers. On September 21st to 23rd, be a part of the movement to pray, vote, and stand for the sake of America. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If on Twitter, it is at TPerkins. And folks, let me encourage you, be praying for the folks in the Carolinas. And if you can, help out. Organizations that we've talked about, Samaritan's Purse, great one to team up with. Go to their website, SamaritansPurse.org. You know, and the efforts are well underway to bring food and supplies to the victims of Hurricane Florence. And as we, as the vice president mentioned just a few moments ago, President Trump was there today visiting with those that were impacted. In fact, passing out food and supplies to them and surveying the damage. Joining us now is the lieutenant governor of North Carolina, our good friend Dan Forrest. He was with the president earlier today, surveying the devastated areas from this historic flooding that resulted from Hurricane Florence. Lieutenant Governor Forrest, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks a lot, Tony. I appreciate you even covering this story right now.
Well, I know what it's like not to get the media coverage when you've got something like that going on, and we've seen that in the past. The media talks about some of the stories to begin with, and they quickly move on. We talked to you a couple of days ago, and now you've had a chance to be out there in the relief effort, and I can tell in your voice you're a little tired because I can imagine you've had some long days. What's it look like right now on the ground?
It's a mess on the ground, as you well know, Tony. I mean, these flood events are just something really different. You know, the wind events, you can certainly see where all the damage is. You can drive around and see where all the hot spots are. And the flood events are a little bit different. You know, as soon as that water starts to recede, and by the way, we still have rivers that are rising, but when the water recedes in a lot of these places, that's when, like you mentioned, the media trucks pack up and they go on to the next news cycle. And people are really forgotten about. But, you know, we were down. I was actually working with Samaritan's Purse yesterday. You mentioned them at the onset here. And I was working with Samaritan's Purse in New Bern, and we were cleaning out a house down there. And, you know, this young man who had 5 feet of water in his house, and now it's full of mold, you know, and everything he owned is covered with mold. And, you know, we're ripping out sheetrock and all this kind of mess. But there's thousands and thousands of homes like that, like you know. And it's why they call it a disaster. It's quite a mess. And, you know, quite frankly, this is a time when we need people to step up and reach out and help their neighbors.
How do you compare this to Matthew? So I know it's not over yet because, as you said, the waters are still rising in some rivers. But what's your prediction here when you compare it to the last major hurricane to hit the area?
Well, I think we can already compare it. It's far greater than Matthew, a far larger storm, far greater impact geographically, our entire coast. And then, 100 miles inland or so is significantly impacted by this. There are still places that are underwater. There are still a lot, the power is coming back on in a lot of places, but there's still a lot of places that are underwater. And so the impact is going to be far greater. I'm just going to guesstimate based on these, guesstimations I've heard already, but probably 4 or 5 times greater than what we saw in Matthew.
Wow, that's significant. I was talking with Luther Harrison just a couple of days ago, and I know there's some communities there in North Carolina where they just finished the rebuilds from the last hurricane, and now the same communities underwater again. So, I mean, this is it's discouraging, I think, for those. I mean, I know it's discouraging for those that are in the midst of it, but as you pointed out, this is a time where We often see the best in our neighbors, and we see the best in Americans when we reach out and we help each other during these times of great crisis.
Yeah, that's right, Tony. You know firsthand. You lived through this firsthand. You experienced it. You have the right kind of empathy. You know personally firsthand how to tell people to help here. But, you see these towns where really half your town's underwater and half your town's getting back about life again. And rightfully so, people get back about life. But, sometimes they forget what's going on across town or, across the state or across your country even. We have people, when I was working at the Samaritan's Purse job site yesterday, there are people there from Michigan and Louisiana and Tennessee and, just helping out because they said, hey, we just want to come help. And this is the time when, the light of Christ shines the brightest, when the time is the darkest for so many people and there's really no hope in a worldly sense for them at all. And you have a chance to show them the true light of Christ and true hope and eternal hope. And, that's what groups like Samaritan's Purse actually do.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, Dan Forrest, my guest. And we're discussing the president's visit today to the Carolinas as he surveyed the damage firsthand and helped in actually some of the relief efforts. Dan, let me ask you this question. I know the answer, but I want to get your take on it because I've experienced it as well. But when you have a president come in, what does that do to the kind of the morale of people to know that they're not alone?
Oh, man, it's really high. I mean, the people in New Bern were really, in Havelock, they're really excited to have the president there. And, the welcome was a very gracious welcome from the people of North Carolina. And, I think people just really want to know, as you well know, they want to know that they haven't been forgotten about. The people are going to do their best to take care of them. Not that the government's going to do all the taking care of, but the president came in and made some big, bold promises that they were going to do things more quickly than they've ever done them before, and they were going to reach out and help these folks. And so, of course, that's incredibly encouraging to them.
We're going to encourage people to pray. We're going to encourage them to contact groups like Samaritan's Purse to either volunteer to come down and help or to make financial contributions. How else might the Christians, our audience that stretches all across this nation, how might they be helpful to the folks in North Carolina?
Well, I think the first thing right now is there are absolute immediate needs. There are people that don't have food. There are people that don't have water. Ice is a big request, as you all know. You can hook up with Samaritan's Purse or Baptist Men or any of these organizations, but you can also get your church groups together and say, hey, we want to go help. If you're in North Carolina, we have thousands of churches across our state, and if every one of them put a group together to come help out people and be a friend to them right now and help them with this mess they're in, that would be a bright light shining in eastern North Carolina. So there's a lot just on the ground, firsthand, human touch kind of stuff that can happen right now.
Well, we will have on the way shortly a trailer load of buckets with cleaning supplies. That's kind of our ministry at our church.
Yeah.
What we learned was so helpful was these buckets with all these cleaning supplies to help people that still have their homes that can get back in. And we might even throw in some Cajun food in there as well.
There you go. There you go. Well, that would be much appreciated, Tony. We really appreciate your thoughts there.
All right, Dan. As always, great to talk with you. We'll continue to pray for the folks there, and anything we can do to help, just let us know.
Thanks, my friend. Have a great day now.
All right, Dan Forrest, Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina. And do we look these? You've noticed this if you're paying attention. These storms are becoming more frequent and with greater intensity. Whether it's a hurricane, whether they're tornadoes, whether they're fires on the West Coast, you know, look, it's the times in which we live. I'm not going to get into, you know, debating the left and the cause of it. I'm just saying they're happening. And as Christians, we know that, you know, we were warned that these types of things would be happening with greater frequency as we move toward the end of time. It's in Scripture. So what should we do? Should we be fearful? Should we run and hide as if you could? No, we shouldn't be fearful. We should be prepared. And this is, as you've heard repeatedly in the last few days as we've talked to different ones, this is a great opportunity. In the midst of these tragedies, there's opportunity to serve. Now, we don't look for these. We don't want them to happen. We pray that they won't. I was praying that the storm would go elsewhere, and we should, you know, we can pray ahead of time. But when that happens, when these storms, when these natural disasters come, what should we do? Well, I think we should be prepared. We should be prepared to serve everyone, to serve our neighbor. And working through the local church is one of the best ways to do it. And so if your church has the ability, and you have the ability to do something, you can be praying for the citizens impacted by these natural disasters. You can maybe take up a collection and send to a church. I would encourage you to partner with a church or with Samaritan's Purse. There's, you know, every denomination has a relief effort. For the most part, the Baptists have one. I think the Assemblies of God, they have them. And so work through your denomination. Doesn't matter. I would encourage you to be involved with a faith-based relief effort. Because as Dan alluded to, when everything you own on this earth has been destroyed by a flood or by a fire or by a tornado. And, you know, I saw this over and over again where people's possessions, everything they owned, waterlogged, soaked, moldy, pulled out of their homes and piled up at the streets to be picked up and carted away. You know, people are wondering, and there's so many people that were, you know, elderly, that had worked all their lives and their savings were in their home and it was all gone. You know, material things, when they're all gone, I mean, yes, they can be replaced in time, but this really shakes people to the core. And they began asking the deeper questions of life. And as Christians, as we minister in these moments and we meet those needs with the food, that's a real need, the water, the supplies, the shelter, but then also the spiritual needs. It is a tremendous opportunity, and that's why I encourage you to support those faith-based ministries that are there, meeting not just the physical need, but meeting the deeper spiritual and emotional needs that surface during these times. So go to SamaritansPurse.org, or as I said, maybe your denomination has a relief effort that you can be involved in, but be praying. And be involved somehow, some way. In fact, I've encouraged our church, and I'm no longer pastoring there, but I had encouraged our church to just have a relief team, a crisis team that's available because of the frequency of these things. Of course, we're down in the Gulf South, Louisiana, where hurricanes tend to be a little more common. But to be able to respond immediately when these things happen, to send teams over to, you know, chainsaw teams, where you've got cooking teams, you've got the teams with the cleanup buckets that I made reference to. Whatever you think your church ministry can be in these times of crisis, be prepared to do so. The government has a role, but the church has a role as well. And some encouraging things, when you look at America, and this is one of the great things about these. In the midst of these great challenging times, you see the greatness of the American people, the love, the compassion, the, you know, people don't ask, are you Republican, Democrat? Are you liberal or conservative? They just help. They just help. And it brings communities together, and it brings the nation together. And so, you know, look, pray, and see how you can be a part of these efforts. All right. Let's see if we got time to take a phone call or two. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Let me remind you, Values Voter Summit coming up. We still got some room here, but also it's going to be on Facebook Live. It's going to be webcast. So find out. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. So if you can't get here, you can still participate. You can still watch it. Download the app because you'll actually be able to see it on the on the app. We're going to be broadcasting the summit on the app. So go to the App Store if you don't already have Stand Firm. Stand Firm app. Go to the App Store, download it on your smartphone, and you can be connected to the Values Voter Summit starting this Friday morning here in Washington, D.C. at the Omni Shoreham Hotel. It's going to be an outstanding event that if you can get here, you won't want to miss it. All right, the phone number 866-372-7234 might be able to get to one call or two. We'll see. I'm going to go back to something we started with on the Brett Kavanaugh. A lot of back and forth on that today. We talked about it with the vice president. Played that clip from Chuck Grassley. The timing of all this makes it so suspect. When you look at the fact that Dianne Feinstein sat on this for 6 weeks, she had the letter, she had the allegation, didn't bring it up in a meeting with Brett Kavanaugh, didn't share it with her colleagues, didn't bring it up in the closed-door meeting with the senators and Judge Kavanaugh, didn't bring it up in the public hearing, and then on the eve before the vote springs this. Now, I'm not going to get into the whether or not I believe the allegation to be true or not, I just say they're suspect. But the timing of that makes it extremely questionable. And it underscores again what is at stake and what the left sees is at stake in the debate over the court. See, increasingly, the court has been the only way that they can impose their policies on the nation. They can't convince legislative bodies to adopt it. They can't convince the American people to adopt it. And so they have to impose it. And that's why this battle is so intense, and that's why they will stop at nothing to preserve the activist courts. Okay. All right. Well, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. Again, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Download the app, Stand Firm, so that you can participate and be a part the 13th Annual Values Voter Summit starting this Friday. All right, folks, great to talk with you today. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.